This past week, the corridors of power in Washington were preoccupied by one thing, Vice President Dick Cheney's hunting accident. Questions may linger, but by week's end, the story seemed to have run its course. The shooting victim, Harry Whittington of Texas, was back home from the hospital, and Cheney had gone home to a hero's welcome in Wyoming at the state capitol in Cheyenne. President Bush spent the same afternoon in Florida, meeting with some of his most loyal constituents and raising money for Republican candidates. Back in Washington, the Senate neared completion of its renewal of the Patriot Act, and the House got itself tied up in knots over the validity of the big budget bill it thought it had passed last month. Joining us to discuss this and more is NPR's senior Washington editor, Ron Elving. Ron, first question, are we finished with this hunting story?
On the most immediate level, yes, Leanne. The vice president has taken responsibility for pulling the trigger. Harry says he's fine. Bush says the way Cheney handled it was just fine. Everybody's ready to move on. But there could be some consequences down the road in the way Cheney operates, because he's drawing a lot of attention to himself at a time when he least wants it.
Speaking of drawing attention to himself, Cheney said that he has the personal authority to declassify documents. What's that about?
Interesting tag that he put on his interview with Brit Hume of Fox News on Wednesday talking about the hunting accident. He said he had the executive authority from the president to classify and, by implication, declassify information. And this was apparently given to him in the month of the U.S. invasion of Iraq 3 years ago, not widely noted at the time, to say the least, and we have no idea how much he may have used this power or whether he's ever used it unilaterally. He would not comment on that when he was asked at the time by Brit Hume in that interview. But there is some evidence that Mr. Cheney has exercised a lot of authority not previously associated with any vice president.
So is the president feeling a little bit upstaged by all of this? I mean, does it weaken his hand, for example, in his dealings with Congress?
Well, it was hard to find the president in the coverage last week. He was trying to get some attention to his health proposals, health savings accounts, consumer power to bargain down the cost of operations and drugs and so on. But right now, the White House had been primarily in a reaction mode, not only because of Dick Cheney, but because of all the things going on around the world. You have the cartoon protests on three continents now. Some of those have turned deadly. Many people have been killed in the rioting. You have Hamas taking over the Palestinian Authority's parliament. A man named Mahmoud Ahmadinejad on the warpath in Iran, looking to build nuclear weapons in defiance of the U.S. and the U.N. And now we also have the leader of Venezuela, Hugo Chavez, threatening to cut off the 1.5 million barrels of oil that that country sends to the United States daily, partly because of some things said about him by the president and the secretary of state.
Stay on the domestic front just for a moment. We want to talk about the domestic spying issue. This is what the White House calls the terrorist surveillance program. At the end of the week, there were some conflicting signals about the attitudes of key Republicans in Congress about this. Are there going to be more hearings on this or not?
Situation's very much in flux. We had thought that there might be some hearings at the end of this month on the Senate side and the Judiciary Committee, but that chairman, Arlen Specter, is not quite so certain of his schedule now. The Justice Department has had objections to bringing in the former Attorney General and one of his assistants to talk about the time when this program was first set up in the fall of 2001. Also, the chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, Pat Roberts, said on Friday that he wasn't going to investigate this program, although he has had some questions about it. And on Saturday said something a little bit different, to the effect of he's still interested in that, but he's negotiating with the White House, and perhaps some kind of legislation can be devised that could make it legal if it isn't legal now.
And as I mentioned in my introduction to you, the Senate has agreed on a deal on the Patriot Act.
Yes, all the holdouts appear to have signed on to the compromises, except Russ Feingold, the Democrat from Wisconsin, who was the only person who opposed the Patriot Act back in 2001 when it first passed. He's still doing kind of an army of one filibuster, but they've gotten cloture now to shut him off, and we expect final passage in the Senate when they return in about 10 days from the President's Day recess.
Congress seems to be in a very ugly mood about Hurricane Katrina and the government response from the White House on down the line. What's your impression of what's going on with that?
Of course, there was a very nasty House report on this last week, 520-page horror story about everything that the government did and didn't do. Michael Chertoff, the Secretary of the Department of Health the Department of Homeland Security, was on the Hill that same day taking a huge beating in the Senate, almost as bad as the former FEMA director Michael Brown got when he was before that committee. And oddly, now Brown has kind of moved out of the scapegoat role and the fall guy role and become, if you will, part of the prosecution. He's turned state's evidence, as it were, and he is testifying that his boss and the rest of the Homeland Security people were too focused on terrorism to take care of that hurricane.
Now, what's with the budget bill? I mean, this big five-year blueprint, they finally finished it earlier this month. Democrats are saying, what, it's invalid? It's not legally enforceable?
Well, it's up to the courts eventually to decide whether it is, in fact, valid. But the House and the Senate bills that were sent to the where that were brought together and then sent on to the president for his signature did not match. There was one provision having to do with paying for oxygen in hospitals that did not match. Some evidence that perhaps the House leaders knew that at the time that they pushed it through. But whether they did or not, it doesn't matter. The two bills have to be absolutely identical or they can't go to the president for his signature. And since they did go on to him, they did so in an unconstitutional fashion, and that's being challenged in the courts. Now, this is a big five-year budget plan. It includes $39 billion in cuts to student loans and Medicaid, a lot of other things that people care about.
And it passed with, what, one vote to spare in the House, tie vote in the Senate, and this tie vote might be broken by...
Well, if there is a tie vote in the Senate, it is broken by the presiding officer of the Senate, who is the Vice President of the United States, Dick Cheney. He has that power, too.
NPR senior Washington editor Ron Elving. He also writes the Watching Washington column for our website, npr.org. Ron, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Leanne.